January 30th, 2006, the House Special Committee on Ways and Means is meeting. President Representative Wilson, Representative Seaton, Representative Samuels, Representative Gruenberg, and Representative Moses. We're going to take testimony today on House Bill 374 and House Bill 375. Both of these legislative measures set up accounts, not funds, but accounts that would provide some revenue that would be eventually appropriated to the PERS and TERS unfunded liability. House Bill 374 is a committee substitute. We have committee substitute for House Bill number 374, 24-LS1453/Y by Wayne, dated 1-24-06. And this bill, the reason there's a committee substitute from the original bill is there had been a bill that had been introduced by HFC to deal with some of the technical things that it needed dealt with in another companion bill. I think it was Senate bill, I can't remember. And I talked to HFC about the original version of House Bill 374, and they had indicated this other bill was ongoing and that they had some problems with the bill in terms of affecting their ability to provide funds and bonding, revenue bonding requirement for their purposes. And so what I did is take the provisions of that other bill, expanded this bill, added those provisions into it, and tinkered with the language in Section 1. Yes?
Would you like a motion to have this bill brought before?
Certainly, thank you.
I move that CS for House Bill number 374, version Y, dated 1-24-06, be brought before us.
Okay. Without objection, the bill's before us. Representative Gruenberg.
Had you finished your explanation?
No, I had not quite. Just 30 seconds more and I'll be done.
Go ahead.
What I would like to do, and in talking with HFC this morning, they had some additional concerns about the problems posed by the bill and their, I guess, rice bowl that would be affected by the money and appropriation to this special account for PERS and TERS liability reduction. They plan to testify and discuss those concerns, and I appreciate them working with me, even though we may disagree on the purposes of the bill or what its effect may be. I'm thankful that the HFC, Mr. Foskey, has testified or talked with me about his concern. I also would like testimony later on from revenue or admin, whomever, about the fiscal effect of the bill and how much money would be provided to the PERS and TERS program by establishing this account. Representative Gruenberg.
No, that was my question.
All right. So are there any preliminary questions about the bill before we take testimony on House Bill 374? Okay. We have three folks signed up from HFC to testify, Dan Foskey, Brian Butcher, and Joe Dubler. I'm not sure all three of you need to testify, Mr. Foskey, but if you want to lead off, go ahead, give us your testimony and your affiliation for the record. Let me ask Mr. Boutin. Mr. Boutin or Ms. Milhorn, do either one of you have the fiscal impact of the bill? Are you going to testify on that?
No, we did a revenue did a fiscal note for the bill, but not, we haven't done one.
All right. Do you have the fiscal note for the bill?
Not with me, but I think you have it.
Okay. Is someone going to testify on the fiscal note? Can they come up and answer questions?
I'd be glad to do that.
Why don't you come forward, please? We'll see if we can get HFC after you online.
Tom Boutin, Alaska Department of Revenue.
Are you waiting for a copy?
Yes.
Okay.
Here's a copy.
The fiscal note?
No.
I've got the.
No, he's looking for the fiscal note.
The fiscal note.
She's got one, Jenny.
Here.
First time I've given revenue a fiscal note. Mr. Bhutan, I understand that your testimony will not be on the committee substitute, but I would like to go into anyway your testimony on the fiscal note anyway.
Yeah.
And the mechanism and the amount of revenue that's potentially available. And then we're not going to take action on this bill today. And then next time, if you can come by with a CS, a revised fiscal note.
Be glad to. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well,
if you give us your name.
Tom Bhutan, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. The fiscal note is pretty simple. We received from AHFC the amounts that they estimate and forecast would come in. And so this fund that's set up by the bill would receive $80 million in 07 and $40 million each year thereafter. We didn't hit it with any management charges. As we understand it, the money would sit there for a very short time, so it would be just invested with the general fund. And so it's our practice not to hit that with money management fees. So it's simply a pass-through in and out of these amounts, $80 million and then $40 million annually. And the committee substitute would modify that, and we'll be glad to do a fiscal note on that committee substitute.
Right. Has the administration taken a position on the bill at all?
I only know what revenue's perspective is, and we could just manage the money. So far as choices that the legislature has to make about where money goes, that's revenue does not have a position on that.
Okay. In drafting the bill, I tried to look at, through the course of this last year, one of the issues has been raised, I think, by the administration, that before we address at least local communities negatively affected by their retirement debt service, that there would be some need to be some sort of recurring source of revenue. And that recurring source of revenue was not identified. But the only really recurring sources of revenues are either in policy form, they're not in place right now. Percent of market value, some sort of community dividend program. The only really recurring source of revenue the state of Alaska has is investment income, HFC, Amerada Hess, and North Slope oil production revenue. I can't think of any other recurring source of revenue, can you?
No, none jump out at me, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So in thinking about that, and trying to identify recurring sources of revenue, the AHFC and the Amerada Hess accounts both came to mind, and that forms the basis for 374 and 375 separate bills. Any other thoughts on the AHFC dividend as in terms of applying it towards the unfunded liability and the retirement systems?
Well, only that it's contemplated now to be used as a source of money, so it's a choice that the legislature gets to make as to where to allocate that.
Okay. Any questions by any of the committee? Representative Grunberg?
Yeah, I apologize. I'm a little behind the curve. I seem to recall last year us talking about the the interest, the time that this large amount of money would remain one quarter in the Treasury, and that would, I assume, earn a substantial amount of interest. How much would it earn in a quarter?
Well, through the chair, Representative Grunberg, we project that that the general fund will earn a rate, annual rate, of 3.7%, and so if you take the $40 million and it's going to give you $370,000.
In a quarter?
Yes.
And that would then pass through as well?
Well, I believe that would accumulate in this account and be available for appropriation, yes.
So it wouldn't go to the the unfunded liability, it would be available for appropriation of the legislature, remain in the general fund.
Well, as I understand this bill, the amount doesn't go toward the unfunded liability, but instead is appropriated to help on the contributions, the annual contributions. And so as I understand this bill, it is not meant to pay down the unfunded liability, but instead is intended to help on the contribution, annual contributions.
We're joined by Representative Roper. Any further committee questions of Mr. Boutin? Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just Representative Roper, we're discussing House Bill 374. There's a committee substitute that moved before us for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was meeting with some bolts of the legislature.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I guess maybe I have a couple questions.
Go.
To you, maybe not to Mr. Boutin. This bill, the way that you have it drafted then, doesn't actually go directly toward the retirement liability, the unfunded liability, but it would still stay in the general fund and it would still remain the same, and then each legislature would decide where it would go?
Yeah, because it's not a dedicated fund, it goes into a special named account similar to like the public education account available for appropriation. We could not advise a future legislature that it would be required to appropriate the funds, but what it does is two things. Number one, it provides a stream of income into an account that's available for appropriation into retirement benefit for retirement for the purpose of retirement benefit liabilities, and it would identify those recurring sources of revenues into that account so that the legislature would at least know that how much is available for appropriation if they chose to do it. So this is not a constitutional measure because we can't have that fund. It would set up this account and say, there's the money available for the liability account. The legislature has taken a step to address this on a long-term recurring basis. And if you choose to do it, there's the money. But that's a political decision that will have to be left to future legislators.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Grunberg, Representative Seaton. To Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to address what Mr. Boutin just brought up, and that is section 4, that's on page 3, line 6. And
Section 4,
right, line 6. And what I guess the question is about the intent of the structure of this bill. It seems like the structure is such that we're going to pay to municipalities and educational districts money instead of paying off unfunded liability. And I was wondering if revenue can give us an opinion on whether the other is available also. Could we restructure this so that the payment was made into the retirement fund on behalf of those municipalities instead of paying money to municipalities, which they could either apply or not apply to their unfunded liability?
Let me address that first. Mr. Boutin, when the drafter came back with the bill, it had legislative intent language in this bill that would require them to pay it directly to their unfunded liability. But the way the language was in the proposed bill was legislative intent language, which I thought was awkward for a legislative measure as opposed to a budget measure. So I had them take that out, and I'll show you the language that was taken out. So the intent was to apply it to the unfunded liability of a local entity, either their teacher or public retirement funds. But the way that language came back was somewhat awkward, and I'll share that amendment with the committee. I'll share that with the committee. And so that's why that did not appear in this bill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can I
follow
up with you? And I think that, I fully agree with you on the intent, but, not having an intent language, but I'm trying to figure out whether revenue could actually structure the intent into the bill so that if we were making these contributions, they would be made on behalf of the political subdivisions to retirement benefit to pay off their unfunded liability instead of making payments to municipalities without a requirement, the legislative intent that says you have to do this with the money. I mean,
let me answer that first, and then Mr. Bhutan, if you could address it. Because the bill could not bind future legislators and would have to be an appropriation through the budget, that intent language or that specific language on where the money would have to be paid to was held more or less in abeyance until the budget bill comes up. So I saw it an unworkable mechanism to put it in statute on that intent, but maybe revenue has a different view.
Through the chair, I don't know that we've examined it from a how to do it legally standpoint. There has been quite a bit of talk that it would make more sense, or it would make at least as much sense, to get the money working at, say, the 8.25% percent assumed rate of return of the sponsor plans as soon as possible. So there's been discussion that a legislature would be better to appropriate the money directly to the retirement funds so that it could be credited to the employers in the appropriate amounts and be working immediately rather than have the transaction that it goes out to the employer and then the employer makes the contribution back to the funds. There's been discussion that, gee, it would make a lot more sense to have the money appropriated directly to the funds and therefore begin earning at the higher rate. Certainly it's presumably it wouldn't be earning at as high a rate while it is out at a municipality.
And again, the intent of these two measures before us is to find sources of revenue to pay for this debt or liability as well as the current costs, and whether it make more sense one way or the other. What you're saying to me is to get the money working earlier. You're saying if it's done by giving to the communities pay back, this is somewhat of a lag. How much lag are you talking about, theoretically?
Well, I suppose it might be paid back over a 12-month period of time as part of the employer contribution. So maybe it's a half-life of 6 months, if I understand it, and if I don't understand it, you know,
I
apologize.
But
so presumably it could be a 6 month kind of lag as opposed to appropriating it directly to the retirement funds.
Mm-hmm. But then could the community get the credit for that anyway, or not? How would it work in terms of the community?
I'm sure the answer to that is yes, but Ms. Melanie Milhorn would be far better than me to talk about the mechanics, but I'm sure the answer is yes.
All right. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess maybe some of these questions are a little bit to you. It looks to me like on page 2, line 28, it specifically says that they are for employer contributions to pay past service liability. So that's clearly set out. But on the other hand, the next line it says, and for other purposes, which would seem to be a barn door allowing the legislature to do what it wished. And that's more of a comment than a question, I suppose. But Mr. Bhutan, maybe I should ask Ms. Milhorn or anybody else at the appropriate time. Is there a way we couldn't short-circuit this entire process by simply, designating that a certain amount of money or percentage that is earned in the AHFC fund each year is designated as unfunded liability funds, so that the AHFC board could simply transfer those to the debt directly, unless the legislature were to pass another law that says no?
Well,
flip it around.
If you're asking me the question, I may be presumptuous in speaking for AHFC, but I think it broadens AHFC's mission beyond what it really should be.
But it is only broadening it to the extent we give them discretion. Because what you're doing, well, you're basically saying this money shall go to this purpose unless the legislature says otherwise.
Well, yeah. Let me think about it.
And secondly, and I'm sorry, you're sort of there, but I'm talking to the chair here. At some point, I presume with this whole system...
I'm not sorry you're there.
That's not what I meant. Secondly, if at some point this liability will be paid off, do you want to put a sunset on the bill?
Whatever billion. I appreciate your optimism.
But the record reflect chuckle.
Cynical chuckle.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, end of my comments.
Representative Roper.
Well, Mr. Chairman, forgive me, I'm just trying to sort this thing out. I guess, number one, Mr. Bhutan, I guess you're representing Alaska Housing Finance?
Or? No, they're online.
Oh, they are online?
They haven't testified yet.
Oh, okay. They, so I'm going to ask a question, maybe, I don't know if this is for Department of Revenue or for them. What the historic dividend has been and the use of the dividend, I'd like to know. Perhaps I should defer the question to Alaska Housing. Although revenue, I don't know. I guess housing would be the...
HFC being online would be far better to answer that.
And then, I hate to miss a chance of Mr. Bhutan being before the committee. without asking him a couple of questions about interest rate, you know. But I'm not going to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll be back. Any further questions of Mr. Bhutan? Anyone? All right. Why don't we take Ms. Milhorn, and then we'll follow up with Mr. Bosky and HFC. Ms. Milhorn, do you have any testimony on this bill? Or? Mr. Brooks? Thank you, Mr. Brooks, if you want to identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Administration. We've submitted a zero fiscal note. From the division's perspective, we could administer whatever system is set up, and regardless of how we set up the payments, with little or no fiscal impact on the division as far as the mechanics. Just in terms of the sums, and maybe this is the more relevant question, is what would be the impact on the system of, say, an infusion of $80 million or $40 million in the first year? Just by comparison, I think the numbers that we contemplated in including in the governor's budget for just to cover the 5% increase that we've talked about is about $100 million. And as long as we're building up to that actuarially determined rate, you are paying down that unfunded liability as you increase that rate. So when you're talking $40 to $80 million in comparison to the 5% increase, maybe that helps to put it in perspective for committee members.
Well, one of the policy things this bill would do is set up this account, this retirement benefit liability account, which does not exist in statute now. What's the general policy reaction to that?
We've only had very preliminary discussions with the governor's office on the account. Obviously, we're all looking at the best solution for arriving at an ongoing source of funds for the for addressing the unfunded liability. I don't know personally what the intent is for the expenditure of those funds in the governor's budget. I hadn't gotten that far into the process, but it seems to me that's obviously going to require some inclusion of third floor folks to discuss the policy implications of spending it here versus other areas of the budget.
All right. Well, again, we can't dedicate it, so it's simply the account mechanism that's set up. Any questions, Mr. Brooks? Representative Roper?
Chairman, Mr. Brooks, you mentioned an annualized increase of $100 million. Isn't it a stepped up, so it's $100 million, $200 million, $300 million in our base every year, though?
Actually, as we've ramped it up, that's accurate. I was just talking as that 5%, just to put it in perspective.
So this is a down payment on a sack lunch because the level goes up every year. Just to make the point, Mr.
Until we get to that rate, which is, I think, 2008 on PERS, 2009 on TERS.
Right. At the 5%?
Yeah, as we ramp it up 5% per year.
Any further questions? Okay, why don't we, Mr. Foskey, are you unmuted now?
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
We are here. I have, and to the members, Brian Butcher is with me, and Joe Dubler, and Mike Buller.
Thank you, sir. Go ahead and give us your testimony and your affiliation, please.
I'm Dan Foskey. I'm the CEO, Executive Director of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. First, I want to commend the members and the author for a bill, your attempt to recognize the ongoing recurring liability with the PERS. However, I'm not real excited in terms of getting AHFC involved on an ongoing basis to fund this liability, and I'd like to explain my reasons why. We are currently, with legislation passed a couple years ago, paying a percentage of net income, which is no longer referred to as net income. You will be seeing another bill where, because of changes to GASB and the FAS that, on accounting standards, we've had to change to net change in net assets. And currently, we have, under the old standard, there would be a dividend of $40 million coming to the state. If the bill passes, which I'm assuming it will, the dividend will be $81.5 million. Now, with that said, we then have a capital budget that was submitted where the current debt service obligations on former or older bonds that we issued on behalf of the state in conjunction with public housing bonds that we've issued and also the bonds or the payment that we make on behalf of the dorms at UAA, that amount is $30.9 million. The capital request that we have is $31.240 million, which leaves an additional $19.3 million for other state funding needs. Now, our concern is that we now add to our list of constituents or those that are seeking AHFC money this large impending or recurring liability, basically in perpetuity, would be my view of it. That's going to be difficult to explain to two groups. One is Wall Street as to how long will AHFC be required to pay into this amount and what happens in the event that this amount grows and we become currently embroiled in a debate as to how much money is left over for HFC's capital requirements based on the millions of assets that we own or in dollar amount, and to then thus be viewed as a going concern by Wall Street. The second group that it involves are those constituencies that are heavily involved in the housing, which is home builders, realtors, and mortgage bankers, senior citizens groups, veterans, and others, where we are the benchmark, if you will, or we are the Housing Finance Corporation in the state with requirements and statutory guidelines as to those groups that we are supposed to serve. So I'm troubled that we create this fund. It creates a lot of problems for HFC, and I'm not so sure that it solves on the other end. You know, if there was a timeline on something like this where you could look down the road and say, okay, on January 15th, 2011, this goes away because everything's paid off, that'd be one argument. I don't see that. I see this as just an ongoing. And so I'm trying to keep the corporation focused in the direction that it has been going. Over the last 11 years, we have developed and generated $1.3 billion in cash to the state, net of our housing programs and all our bond issuance. So we've been a good partner for the state, and I would ask consideration that we keep ourselves where we can stay focused on our mission and not add to an ongoing situation. If I had a preference, because I usually get asked these questions, I would encourage the state to look at debt issuance or other obligations to help pay for their capital projects, and if you have residual cash, then you would invest cash in this type of fund to try and free up some capital from the state's perspective. But that's a philosophical difference that I have with some of these bills on mortgage bond or pension retirement bonds and some of the other stuff that's being considered. I guess that ends my testimony. I'm certainly happy to answer any questions, if I may.
Questions by the committee? And Representative Rob Burr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Pawlowski, on page 2 of the bill, the Hawaii Version Committee substitute indicates on lines 6 and 7 that current formula of $103 million or 75% of net income is changed to adjusted change in net assets. I mean, what is your net asset base right now, and what would that amount to, and what impacts would that have on your rating standards and the viability of the corporation?
Through the chair, Representative Rogberg, the actual net change or adjusted change in net assets is around $86 million, formerly called net income. But again, based on changes to the Accounting Standards Board, we can no longer call it net income. Then that is adjusted at 95% of that amount is what's being freed up for discussions with the state, which was submitted in our capital budget. And that amount comes to $81,506,000. That it represents the 95% of the adjusted change in net assets. And I have Joe Dubler. Joe, anything you'd like to add? Have I hit that pretty good?
Wait, ma'am, could you back up at the moment, Mr. Chairman, through the chair? So there's been, is that a GASB or other accounting change where you have to call net income net assets? Is that part of this change?
Mr. Chairman, this is Joe Dubler. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Finance Director for Alaska Housing. And if I might address that question, the GASB 34 changed the way governmental entities have to report their financial statements, such that there's no longer a balance sheet and income statement. They're now called a statement of net assets and a statement of changes in net assets, which is the equivalent of an income statement. So all it did was change some numbers around, or change the titles around, and actually changed the way we reported some items on our financial statements, which is what led us to the adjusted change in net assets that we are proposing under, I believe it's House Bill 361.
So this is at odds with GAAP, and therefore a net asset, like even a standard GAAP balance sheet, would be different, or you still call a net asset, and this is a different GASB net asset, is that right?
Through the chair, GASB now requires net assets is a term that is a prior to GASB 34 is an equivalent of an equity account. You know, you've got your assets, your liabilities, and they've changed the equity part of a balance sheet to what's called net assets. And on the income statement, they've changed it to a change in net assets. So all it shows is your revenues and your expenditures, and the bottom line is your change in net assets.
But GAAP stays the same?
No. Generally accepted accounting principles, which I believe is what you're referring to as GAAP, has been changed, and actually changes every time the Governmental Accounting Standards Board or the Financial Accounting Standards Board puts out a new pronouncement. That becomes the new GAAP. And so with GASB 34, when it came out, it changed GAAP so that what we have to do is report under the current rules, and we're no longer allowed to report a number that says net income.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, I mean, for a private sector accounting, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Do they have to modify their practices because of GASB?
Through the chair, no. The GASB only applies to governmental entities and certain nonprofits. it does not apply to for-profit entities. That's covered by FASB, the Financial Accounting Standards Board.
Right, FASB, okay.
Yes.
But so their net assets are different than GASB net assets.
They still call them retained earnings, contributed capital. They've still got all the good old accounts that we used to use, but now we're stuck with these.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Government Accounting Services Board?
Standards Board.
Governmental Accounting Standards Board.
And where does the E come in?
That's how we pronounce it. It's GASB. It's an acronym.
GASB.
Okay.
Now, if I may, Mr. Chairman, Dan Pawlowski again, under the old rules and under the old statute, the amount of money that we would have been making available to the state would have been $40 million. And we didn't think that that was appropriate because of the way that GASB changed, thus GAAP, and I won't get into all the acronyms, but the way it accounted for grants. And we made the changes and submitted this legislation so that the dividend to the state would be the $81.5 million that is currently working its way through the halls of the legislature in HB 361, if I get that right.
But I understand that the fiscal note that's been prepared by the Department of Revenue reflects the current situation, not with the GASB-introduced changes. Is that correct?
I think so, yeah. I heard Deputy Commissioner Boutin refer to $40 million and $80 million, and if it's $40 million, that's the old way.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, this is Joe Dubler again. For fiscal year 07, we went ahead with the $80 million number, the $81 million number, because that's what the governor had proposed in his budget, and we were counting on that passing. But for future years, we didn't want to be presumptuous and assume that the legislation passed.
Representative Seaton, then Grunberg, then Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and for I guess to let them know, the Y version does include that adjusted change in net asset on page 2, but also on page 5 we have this, the top of it, A is a 95% of the adjusted change in net asset would be for fiscal year 2005 would be done, but then down on line 15, starting in fiscal year 2008, then there's a change to 85% of the number. And so I guess what I'm trying to determine is currently we have on page 2, the current law is 75%. The proposal that's been incorporated in this CS is that for this year it would be 95% of the adjusted net income equivalent there, and then in 08 going to 85%. And are these recommendations by AHFC, or are these just conforming to budgetary contributions? And I guess what I'm trying to figure out is that the 95% of adjusted change in net assets for this year, are you saying that that is going to, if that is designated in this bill as going to retirement funds, that somehow will impact your ability to invest in the requirements that AHFC has for other capital differently than if it's available in the governor's budget?
Through the chair, if the current statutes are reflected in the bill with the modifications blacklined. If you go to page 3, there's transition on line 20, section 2, transition phase-in amount of dividend. The way this was written when the original bill passed, I believe it was House Bill 256 two or three years ago, was the long-term amount of portion of the dividend would be 75% of the corporation's net income, which, as we just discussed, will be modified to adjust to change in net assets. But we did a phase-in amount to kind of ease off of the $103 million that the corporation has typically made available. So in fiscal year 2007, that amount is 95% of the corporation's adjusted change in net assets, which is on page 5 on line 1, the lesser of 103 or 95%. And then in fiscal year 2008, as you identified, is on line 15, the 85%, and then from that point forward, once the transition language has run its course, we get into to the regular dividend of 75%.
Which is stated on line 7, page 2.
Right. And if as far as the where the money is going or where it's gone in the past, we can get that information on where it's been spent in the past. And the current proposal is the of the $81 million, approximately $31 million is going to debt service on prior state capital project bonds, and approximately $31 million to the corporation's capital budget, with about $19 million available for appropriation by the legislature.
Thank you. So what you're saying is, with this bill, if we identify what would be available for the legislature to appropriate, the difference is that this bill identifies the full amount And so the $31 million for capital and $31 million to pay off past debts would have to come from some other appropriation. Is that basically what I'm hearing?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that's exactly the corporation's concern, is that we end up in line behind the public employees retirement system and the teachers retirement system to fund our own capital budget. And that, I believe that was at least partially addressed by the modifications to the bill, to the CS that you're looking at today, where in on page 1, line 10 through 12, we are deducting amounts appropriated for capital projects before the amount that's determined to go to the retirement benefit liability account.
One more follow-up, and then
Ed, thank you. And just following up, so the really the only difference then in this bill is where the state's but the state's available appropriation of $19 million, whether that would go to the retirement account or to any other purpose that the legislature just picks at this point in time. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's Dan Fauske.
Representative Grunberg, did you have a question?
Yes. I'd like to focus on the core change you're making on page 2, line 7. And this relates also to section 2 of the bill, which is found on page 2, lines 18 to 21.
Section 7 of the bill, you said?
No. I'm focusing on page 2 of the bill.
Right.
Section 1, page 2, lines 6 and 7, and section 2, page 2, lines 18 to 21.
Thank you.
It looks to me like, and by the way, I'm not an accountant, and my eyes glaze over at accounting terms, so you're going to have to Gerberize this for me like baby food, I'm afraid. It looks to me like the dividend currently for AHFC is the lesser of two amounts, either $103 million or 75% of the corporation's net income. Now that's being changed to the lesser of $103 million or 75% of the, quote, adjusted change in net assets. And that's a new term that's going to be defined in law to mean the change in net assets from the base fiscal year adjusted for certain things. However, if your net assets change, that could be a paper change only and not reflected in any real money. It's not like income. In other words, it could be simply a paper change that could be a stock or other investment that happens to go up or down. Isn't that much more risky than basing it on income?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, the problem that we have, and we've addressed these changes, the changes that were made in this CS were to conform this bill to House Bill 361, which is addressing the changes in the current statute.
I understand we happen to have this as a convenient target of opportunity. We don't happen to have House Bill 361. That's why I'm asking the question.
Exactly. Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, the reason that we have to make this modification, the statute specifically references net income. The corporation, because of GASB 34, does not have the term net income anymore in its financial statements. So for us to come up with a number that is net income, it does not exist anymore.
I understand that, and my question is a policy one. Are you saying that the federal government now requires you to get away from basing this on net income to some kind of a momentary balance sheet?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, the number that's referenced there is change in net assets, which is a term that is the current replacement for net income. It's not a change. It's not a net asset number. It's not a balance sheet number. It is an income statement number. It's just we don't call it an income statement anymore. it is terribly confusing, and it's taken a few years for people to get used to looking at these new financial reports because they don't have the same terms, and we've had to adjust how you look at them.
I understand. Representative Greenberg, one more follow-up, and I want to get to that other bill. We'll come back to this bill, too.
Okay, just one more question. I looked at AS 1856089D. I don't see the term net assets defined anywhere. And apparently this is based upon some kind of an accounting standard. Is it defined in state law, or could this just change like the wind as some federal regulation or something changes based on things that occur on Wall Street or Washington or some other place on the planet?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, change in net assets is a number that, you know, in 10 years or so, people will begin to recognize, hopefully, as net income. That's the new name for net income. The adjusted change in net assets, the definition is included in House Bill 361, and what it does is, this gets pretty technical, but what happened also with GASB 34 is there were a few expenditures that the corporation used to account for on our balance sheet that we now have to put into our change in net statement of changes in net assets. Those amounts reduce the corporation's net income to an amount that prior to GASB 34, they didn't exist. We ran them through our balance sheet. So in order to conform the current financial reporting model that we're under, we had to add those expenses back in, increasing our net income to make the dividend what it would have been had these changes not occurred. So all we're doing with these is trying to back out the effect of the changes that GASB 34 required us to make.
Okay. Representative Roekberg, did you still have a question?
Yeah, very quickly. Therefore, gentlemen, you mentioned 19.3 available. Looking at this bill, would the 95% transition or 75% normalized, would that be the amount at which you'd calculate against? So say it's about $19 or $20 million available, but 75% of that would be $15 million. Would that be the amount?
Through the chair, Representative Roberts, Dan Fowsky again here. No, what's available is $81.5 million.
Well, that's committed to bonds, debt service.
Well, no, $30.9 million is committed to debt service. Then there's $31.2 million that is under the normal AHFC capital budget that is always submitted. In that program, you have the teacher housing loan program, the supplemental program, the weatherization program, the federal and competitive grants, the energy efficiency, all the stuff that we've been submitting for years and years and years. That's $31.2 million. Then you have remaining $19.332 million that is generally held out, and the legislature appropriates that where is necessary. In the past, historically, that entire amount, which has gone as high as $25 million, has been for Village Safe Water. That's been, that's a program a lot of you are familiar with. That's what has funded that line item, I would say, for the last 7 to 9 years, was that amount remaining in the AHFC dividend minus the capital project bond payments and the capital budget request to the corporation.
Very good. Mr. Chairman, could you folks provide that breakdown of the history and current expenditures to each committee member? I think it would be very illuminating.
Just to the chair, and we can distribute it if you want.
Right. And then, Mr. Chairman, if I could, two more things. Number one, Mr. Fowsky, could you tell the committee what impact and approximately the impact of the housing and financial services industry in the state of Alaska has on the state domestic product here, which you think may be in jeopardy because of this bill?
No, that was a loaded question.
Mr. Chairman, to the chair, Representative Roberg, we have done numbers in the past where in total, we estimate, based on the numbers that we have added and gathered from various factors, that the housing industry represents roughly 25% of the GDP of the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more thing.
Well, one thing I want to clarify is this bill was intended to do it only after any amount was appropriated for any capital projects. It was very carefully done so that we wouldn't interfere with AHFC's mission or the housing market in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fowsky, could you And your staff call my office, set an appointment for by telephone today over Block 80. I need to talk to you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Representative Robert Weaver, you were on our list. We have the message to call. We were going to do that.
Thank you.
Representative Samuels, end you down this question. No. Representative Seaton, do you have an amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I might offer an amendment, that would be, it's labeled Y1, Wayne.
I'll object for purpose of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, this modifies Section 416A on page 3, line 12. And what this is doing is getting to the question of whether we want to appropriate money for voluntary unfunded liabilities that municipalities take upon themselves or school districts. And this voluntary unfunded liability, as we've discussed, is based on elected officials being able to access the PERS system without adequate contributions to allow for the payment of those over time. In other words, if we pay an elected official $50 a month, that's basically $10 or $5.50 a month that goes into the account, but they qualify for PERS retirement. And so it's known ahead of time by a political subdivision that they are not putting in basically any money to pay for those liabilities that are occurring in the future. And so what this does is it simply reduces by a proportionate amount the amount that the state would contribute to the past service costs for those municipalities and political subdivisions that decide that they want to create for themselves this voluntary unfunded liability. And so that's total purpose and the goal of this. And it also has in, as you'll notice in there, that if they decide to contribute an amount equal to pay the, so that they don't have an unfunded liability, they contribute into the retirement system the amount of the average wage, then that wouldn't be subtracted.
All right, we're going to hold that and have folks have time to think about. Representative Grunberg?
Yes. Before we take up the amendment, I would like to hear from Kevin Ritchie or somebody from the AML or somebody representing those people to hear the other side. So
we're not going to act on this amendment now. We're going to hold it so people have a chance to look at it, think about it, testify onto it. I would like Mr. Foskey to provide us with you'd testified that you were adding an interest group to those who theoretically are laying a claim to AHFC's dividend. And what happens is a growing concern by Wall Street. Could you provide your correspondence dated prior to today from those groups that have expressed in writing those growing concerns about what this bill may do?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I don't have correspondence other than 15 years of selling bonds on Wall Street. I can certainly supply you with information as to the questions we continually are addressed to us by Wall Street in reference to the amount of money flowing from HFC to the state.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
All right. We're going to lay 374 aside for now and take up the other bill that was specifically scheduled for today, House Bill 375. And Mr. Boutin, can you come up again, please, sir?
Tom Boutin, Deputy Commissioner of Revenue.
Thank you, sir. Did AHFC have a fiscal note on House Bill 375?
On 374, I'm not sure. On 375, I don't think they would, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Unless I'm confused here.
Yeah. What? We'll go off record a second. You can add brief at ease. All right, we're back on record. I misspoke, Mr. Boutin.
No, I'm sorry.
Does Department of Revenue have a fiscal note on this?
Yes, I have it in front of me, and Mr. Chairman, the fiscal note just...
Let me introduce the bill real quick, Mr. Boutin. We're talking about House Bill 375, right? And this bill would use money from the Amerada Hess account to, or interest off the Amerada Hess account to fund the liability, debt retirement of that liability. That's essentially what it does.
Exactly right.
All right. Go ahead with your testimony, sir.
Well, I'll just testify on a fiscal note, if I could, Mr. Chairman. Permanent Fund Corporation estimates earnings of Amerada Hess account of $27.6 million annually, and so 50% of that money would be $13.8 million, and holding it for one quarter at, again, the 3.7% assumed rate on the general fund brings that amount to $13.9 million, and so that's the amount that would be available to help employers meet their contribution rates for PERS and TERS.
Right. Has revenue or the administration taken a position on this bill?
Not that I would know, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Yeah, Representative Roquebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bouton, correct me if I'm wrong. I've heard some problems about use of Amerada Hess monies on a cash flow basis. Is there any difficulty in using them, say, on July 1st, 06 for the 07 fiscal year for this bill or any other purpose, or is there pre-commitments or a timing issue there?
I'd have to look at that, Mr. Chairman. I don't remember from the deliberations last year about using Amerada Hess money to pay debt service. I'm that's just too far back for me. I don't remember, Mr. Chairman.
Let me, so we can assume that it's the Amerada Hess funding right now is available for July 1st, 06, FY 07 expenditure for whatever purpose the legislature directs?
I believe that to be true, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Representative Wilson? No questions. Anyone else have further questions, or Mr. Bouton? Do you have Representative Seaton?
Yes. And I presume that when we address the question in the other bill about appropriations to the state or political subdivisions or a mechanism for appropriating to the retirement fund for contributions on their behalf, that applies to this bill as well as the last?
Yes, through the chair, this would the idea that we could be a bit more efficient by appropriating the money directly into the retirement funds and thereby putting them to work sooner, that would apply equally.
Good, thank you. Okay. Further questions of Mr. Bouton? Thank you, Mr. Bouton.
Thanks.
So you're basically, the bottom line is $13.9 million available for this account, the theoretical account that
yes.
they set up on the bill.
Yeah. I will add, certainly there's more earnings volatility in the Amerada Hess Fund than as we all know, it's invested at the rate of the permanent fund, and so there is earnings volatility at with those sorts of asset allocations, just as there is in the sponsor plans for PERS and TERS. This fiscal note doesn't talk about that earnings volatility, but certainly there would be years when the earnings would be substantially higher, and there would be years when there would be no earnings.
Representative Seat.
Mr. Bouton, would there be anything that would be a problem with doing a percent of market value calculation on Amerada Hess and then designating that those funds so that would be consistent over time?
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, that's something I certainly haven't thought about, and it doesn't jump out at me that it would seem to me that percent of market value would make sense for Amerada Hess just as it does for the permanent fund itself. But the mechanics of having the Amerada Hess be subject to percent of market value but invested along with a permanent fund, that's something I would sure have to talk to people about and people would have to think about. I sure haven't thought about it.
Let me ask a question, then Representative Seaton had a follow-up, and then Representative Roquebert, and then Representative Wilson. When Mr. Representative Roquebert asked you whether there was any problem with using the money from this account on a cash flow basis, did you defer or were you getting back to the committee? Did you defer to law, Department of Law, or someone else?
I'd be glad to get back to the committee so okay. far as...
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Representative Seaton.
Yeah, and I would just like you to get back to us on the... of course, it's a legislative determination, but on the ability or any difficulties in doing a percent of market value on Amaretta Hess as a separate sub-account within the permanent fund.
I'd be happy to do
Thanks,
that.
Thanks, Mr. Boutin. Mr. Representative Rothberg.
Mr. Chairman, on that line, do you happen to know roughly how much the corpus of the Amaretta Hess sub-account is right now?
I sure haven't looked lately. It's the generic answer to that has been $425 million for some time, but somebody, anyone would want to look online. I haven't done that.
So if you did a 5% POMV, it'd be lower than the $27 million. But what's the $27 million calculated on? Let me look at, what was the kind of a throw-off rate? What is that?
It seems to me that might be at a rate of 6.7%.
6.7.
On the 27.6 million annual?
Against the corporate.
To get to that, yeah.
So it'd be higher at that, presumably lower than performance rate for a POMV methodology if you went down to, say, 5% or 6 or whatever.
Well, Mr. Chairman, excuse me, again, I mean, this is... 50% of that earnings rate, the percent of market value, I'm not sure what representative's seat, and I'm not sure if it'd be 5% or 2.5%. It's just a methodology that I understood to be asked about.
Right, and the purpose of the bill was to not take the entire interest thrown off by that amount in recognition there's going to be political requests for other uses of that fund, but... Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Patan, for what I'm reading on page 2 of the bill, lines 13 and 14, this bill says that half of it would be deposited into the Alaska Capital Income Fund and the other half deposited into a retirement benefit account. At this point in time, if I understand right, at this point in time, the earnings aren't, they're just there and growing, and they're not used for anything right now.
They are available for appropriation through the chair.
And so that would be the full $27.6 million that we're talking about right now.
Well, as I read the bill, we were talking about 50% of those earnings.
And then let's see, Representative Gruenberg, then Representative Wilson, you follow. I beg your pardon.
Because according to this bill, it says that half shall be annually deposited in an Alaska Capital Income Fund, and the other half shall be annually deposited into the retirement benefits account. So that tells me that the full amount is going to be go somewhere.
Our fiscal note dealt with the amount that would go into this new fund and what that would earn for the one quarter and then be shipped out to the employers.
Mr. Okay, Chairman.
Follow yes. up one more time. Just
yeah, go ahead, Representative Wilson.
Because I'm not understanding this, I guess. So right now, all of it goes into the Alaska Capital Income Fund?
Yep. Mr.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah. On the point that Representative Wilson is making, we passed last year a capital income fund, and all of the interest from the capital, from the Amaretta S fund, does go into that fund, which we have access to. So that's the current statute as of last year.
Okay.
Let's see. Representative Seaton, you had a question?
No.
And Representative Roper? No? Further question, Representative Roper? There is a committee substitute that will, I don't want to move or have a motion to adopt this bill because there is a CS that should have been distributed. We'll distribute that. I know we don't have it. And then we'll get to that. It's essentially the same. There's some minor amendments.
I'm sorry.
We'll get to that next time. Any further testimony or any further questions, Mr. Boutin, on this? Representative Gruenberg?
I had introduced a bill last year. It didn't go anywhere. I didn't ask for any hearings. And I'm kind of giving a little bit of notice. When the Amerada Hess account was established, when I served a number of years ago, there was a provision in there that said you couldn't be disqualified from sitting on a jury trial because of it. And, of course, that's long since passed, and there are a couple of statutes that are totally out of date as a result. They can't cure it in the revisor's statute, but if I may offer that as an amendment to this because the statutes are just totally out of date.
Right. Any further questions, Representative Roker?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. If I could ask Representative Grunberg what you meant. You're going to throw out the whole concept of Amerada Hess? Is that what you're saying?
No. No, no, no.
No, he's just dealing with the jury trial effect of the having the...
Is that doable?
No, anyway. No. What happened was some lawyers for Amerada Hess, we were in some litigation with Amerada Hess.
Sure. Yeah. I know
what and they were making noise. They were going to disqualify everybody in the state from sitting on the jury trial because it might affect their permanent fund dividend. And so we passed a little statute that said you can't disqualify everybody in the state because of the possibility this might affect their dividend. It was a very specific statute. It's totally out of date now, and it's just cleaning it up.
Well, it's the rationale for the whole sub-account. But anyway, if I have a question, Mr. Boutin.
Representative Roper.
Mr. Boutin, you're using 6.7%. Have you had some later insight from the Alaska Permanent Corporation's projected rates of return? It seems to be about 120 basis points below their targets or something.
Through the chair, no, that was just my recollection. And so
what, the 27 million is your recollection?
No, the 27 million is in the fiscal note. I don't see where we put in the fiscal note the rate of return. And so I don't believe I said that I was sure it was 6.7. It just seemed to me it was something like that net of fees, but
okay.
Yeah.
So that's you used whatever the permit funds projection was.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, any further questions, Mr. Boutin? Thank you, Mr. Boutin.
Thanks.
Ms. Milhorn, Mr. Brooks, do you have any testimony on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, it would be basically the same as on 3.7.
Why don't you come up and give it for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, my name is Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Administration. Since the bills 374 and 375 are constructed largely the same, we've submitted another zero fiscal note for the mechanics of allocating out the funds. But my comments from the earlier bill would basically apply to this bill as well.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Brooks? Representative Seaton? No?
On this bill or on the other information they provided?
Either one.
I guess I had a question from the Alaska Retirement Management Board report that we got distributed.
Oh, let's ask on this bill first, and then we'll go to that. We're going to get to that.
No questions on the bill.
Anyone else on House Bill 374? Is there anyone here present? I beg your pardon. Is there anyone present testifying on House Bill 374 or 375? Mr. Ritchie, why don't you come forward? You weren't here for our earlier discussion on these bills, but there's been an amendment offered to House Bill 374 that might affect your members' interests, and we're going to take this bill up at a further hearing. So,
okay, I won't comment on that right now if that's your...
Very fine.
I'm Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League. Number one, I just want to thank you for working on this. It's certainly important. I would like to offer testimony on the reduction provisions in the House bill, the one that's currently in there, the one that's been provided.
You mean House Bill 374 or 375? 374 sets up a dividend program from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and the second House Bill 375 sets up Amerada Hess, use of the Amerada Hess account.
Yes, sir. I just want to thank you for working on this. We will still continue working with you. Of course, there's three community dividend bills that also use Amerada Hess as a primary funding source, and that obviously is a conflict. But we'll obviously work through that. They're obviously related issues. So at this time, I'd answer any questions that anybody has.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Mr. Ritchie, I guess the question comes down to what we were talking about on the mechanism for getting there. These bills had amounts appropriated to state and political subdivisions of the state, including the educational districts, et cetera. The purpose of the bill being to reduce the past service cost liability, do you, the people you represent, do they have a problem if we would make contributions to their past service cost liability accounts instead of giving money to them directly and then having them return it over time back to the through their contributions?
Through the chair, I haven't obviously talked to all the finance officers. I suppose it's possible that, thoughts might vary on that. However, all the finance officers I've talked to on our legislative committee don't see any reason why you'd have to put that extra step in of passing money through the municipality and passing it back. The real issue is a past service liability. If there's a way to reduce that on the state level, obviously that will meet our needs as far as, reducing that liability and payments over time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions, Mr. Ritchie? Okay, we'll have you before us again, Mr. Ritchie. Any further comment or testimony on House Bill 374, 375? There is a committee substitute for House Bill 375 that will be passed out later today. And is there any other business to come before the committee? Any comments? Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.